Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast, where we bring together the best medical minds, thought leaders, scientists, patients, and caregivers to inform and inspire the spondylitis community. I'm your host, Jill Miller, living my best spa life, knowing that how we meet today has the power to change everything going forward. Please note that the information provided in this podcast should not be considered medical advice. We do encourage all listeners to consult their healthcare professionals for medical concerns. Thank you for listening, and we hope you find our discussion today enlightening. Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast. Welcome back to part two of Redefining Strength, Jennifer Forbes on life after rowing, spondyloarthritis, and her comorbidities. If you haven't already listened to part one of our conversation with Jennifer Forbes, I encourage you to start there. In that episode, Jen shared her powerful journey from elite athlete to patient advocate, including the long and winding road that led to her spondyloarthritis diagnosis. Today in part two, we're going to pick up right where we left off, diving into how Jen manages multiple comorbidities, builds community, and redefines strength beyond sport. From trauma-informed advocacy to finding joy in unexpected places, her story is a testament to resilience, purpose, and healing. So let's get back into it. Jen, welcome back to SpondyCast. How are you today?
I'm doing well, thank you. Since we last spoke, I think you were catching me right after I came back from this little 5-day combine where I spent time with former professional athletes who were in transition out of sport. And it was a really lovely experience. And most of them were former football players. And so meeting, former other athletes who are transitioning in a totally different world than me. It was eye-opening. It was also this beautiful trust fall of, seeing this transition. It's not just about transitioning out of sport or transitioning from being able to do one thing and then having, an autoimmune disease sort of creep up on you. A lot of it is just transitions in general and how complicated they can be and having that support system. So I'm sure we're going to dive into that, but it was, I'm doing well. I feel like I'm building the support system right now that I didn't feel like I had before.
That is beautiful. And I want to come back to that, but this is right. The trust fall piece and the transition, I'm going to say it again. You're the goo that will be the butterfly in not too distant future. So overall, I know we got to your diagnosis last time and yes, where you're at, but one of the things we wanted to dive into too was you have other comorbidities that are even amplifying some of the impact of spondyloarthritis. What is your best coping strategy for all of this?
Knowledge is number one. Education is the number one thing for me right now, because I don't know who originally said it, but I remember this as a Maya Angelou quote, the more when you know better, you do better. So I think the thing that is so hard when this is not just with pain I felt this when I was training, when you're a novice or a new person at a sport, my goodness, your nervous system is just freaking out and everything feels like a threat. So, but I remembered that of how all I need to do is learn it, learn the process, feel like I understand it, practice it. We call it getting in our reps, and it starts to feel a little bit more safe. So for me, I'm in the education stage and the practicing stage of getting into a rhythm, getting into a routine of okay, what do I not? Because when I was hit with all this, it was also confusing. I mean, you heard me last time we spoke. And by the way, Jill, I listened to that podcast, I kid you not, probably over 20 times to be oh gosh, we really got to work on this, that, and the other. But the reason why I say that is it feels really jarring the first time around. Now that I have been talking to friends who think they might have, similar symptoms as me. I feel like I can educate them and empower them to go see their doctor or talk to this doctor over that doctor. And it is the education part. That is the thing that has, that's the keystone, I feel like, for me, of getting a handle on this and being able to move forward. It's the, like, not knowing and the uncertainty that for me was really, that was where the suffering came in. Because I mean, I don't need to remind anyone really, but like, if you've never done rowing is a pretty torturous sport. Like, it can be, I mean, really, like, a lot of the racing is like, you're in physical pain within 30 seconds of starting the race, and you are training your body to be used to being and to tolerating discomfort.
Right.
And so
you're consistently like building the resilience.
You're building the capacity, you're building the resistance and your resilience rather. And you're also building this, like, this is painful, and you're actively trying to rewire your brain while you're rowing or while you're training, of like, I am, your brain thinks that you're dying, right? Your brain is like, you are in danger. You've never done this before, and it tries to stop you, and it sends you all these like pain signals. Also, like, if you're out of shape, like, you're gonna get, or you're trying to do something you've never done before, your muscles will go into this state of releasing compounds that make your muscles hurt a lot. So when you don't know, your brain is confused by this a lot of the times. And so it like tries, so it tells you to stop. And so you stop and you're like, ah, I can't do this. It's too hard. But with this, so I'm borrowing that and, you know, and taking it into this next phase of like, you are not dying. You are safe. You think, like, yes, this threat is real. You need to educate yourself and understand what the parameters are and how to get out of this heightened threat state, because this isn't a game, right? Rowing was a game. And like, yes, you are in danger and you are also going to be okay. You need to understand how to get yourself out of this like fire state, because like basically my whole body was on fire. Right. And because I'm so used to ignoring pain signals, I've done that for so long that I think, again, probably could have been, I mean, not to go back to the last episode, but probably could have been diagnosed sooner had I just not, it didn't occur to me that something else other than, oh, just the physical pain part of the game was going on. You see what I'm saying? So like, now that I'm out of the sport and all those other variables went away and it still was happening, and it was, you know, the colitis was getting worse, the back spasms were still happening, my fatigue got worse, my depression, my anxiety, like, it didn't get better. It didn't get better. And so I was like, okay, something, the rowing was actually helping me to a certain degree because it was giving me an outlet.
And yeah, let me ask you this. So as you have like moved through that piece,
and
the new path, right? Like, as a new path comes forward, like, and it is, you're in a, I don't want to call it like a rebirth state, but you're in like this transition into a new, maybe a new book, not just a new chapter. But what's your number one goal you're working toward right now, like for you?
Well, Jill, and that, I'm glad that you said a rebirth. And I don't want to skip past that part either, because I think it's important. Like, I actually feel like this is a rebirth, and I have thought about it in the frames of like my life being in thirds up until this. So I am in like the next third of my life right now. And it feels like the slate has been wiped clean in a way. And I'm starting over again. That is both terrifying and freeing. Yeah. And so in order to wipe that slate clean, and I'll actually share too, this is going into the goals part, like, because I think it's important. And I'm going to try to be quick about this because I was very verbose the last time. But when I was training, I've always been a reader. Like I mentioned, I was an environmental science major. I got introduced to Michael Pollan's work very early on in my collegiate career. And he's a journalist and he writes a lot about food, but he also writes a lot about, you know, substances and the cultural implications of those. And so he wrote a book that a lot of people probably know about. It's called How to Change Your Mind. And it's about the history of psilocybin therapy. And I, being an athlete, was terrified of getting in trouble for taking any sort of drug or getting arrested or whatever. So I didn't do any of that in college. I didn't try to like cheat the system, and then because I had this opportunity to train in college, and, I had a scholarship to look after. I wanted to train on the national team. So I was like, I'm not getting in trouble. But I read about it. I learned about it. I felt like it was a safe thing once I understood it more, going back to the education piece. And I signed up because I'm not fully ready to just try it by myself. What I learned was with psilocybin, for those of you who don't know, is the compound found in a mushroom. It's a hallucinogen, but it also, and it's a Schedule 2 or 3 drug classified. I can't remember exactly, but Johns Hopkins, I'm in Baltimore City right now. It's where I grew up. They started doing research, I think in the 90s or a while ago. The book talks about it a lot and it goes into all the research, but basically the government stopped, shut it down. And, I went back to Hopkins to do a low back pain and depression study, and I was given psilocybin as part of the study. So I had a guide. I liked the controlled area. I had people around me. It was safe. And one of the things that I realized, I could do a whole episode on that journey. Cause I remember everything, and it wasn't fun. It was very somber. It was productive though, I thought. I learned that I haven't felt safe in my own body, in my own space, in my house, in my own brain in a lot of ways. And I used rowing to a degree and sport as a way to, I really dove into rowing because it's an endurance sport, as a way to process trauma, as a way to process my anger, as a way to process my sadness and feeling like I wasn't being heard. I did that in basketball, I did that in soccer, like all of that stuff. I mean, sport was really my outlet for a lot of stuff. And I did really enjoy it as well. But when that, what I also learned was the harder you go in rowing, the more you are rewarded. And that's like the basic thing that you hear a lot. And so I just applied that to everything. I said, well, if you're hustling, you're going really hard, then that's going to be rewarded. What I started to learn as I got older was that wasn't exactly true. I was honestly a little bit angry or, jealous or whatever you want to call it, of the people that seemed to be doing less work, looked happier, looked healthier, seemed to be less tired, like weren't exhausted all the time. Meanwhile, I'm, doing 2-a-days, trying to do as many credits in college as I could. I wanted to do the hardest thing possible. And instead of, like, I made at my whole entire existence, I tried to make everything hard on purpose. And it was. And I think to a degree, like, that has shaped that. The willingness to do that has made me into a person that is not like everyone else, which is not a bad thing. But it also made me, now that I've had this time to be alone with my thoughts, it made me realize, like, I really need to learn how to love myself and care for myself and be soft and safe to and for myself, and without anybody else's permission, like without anybody else saying, like, do you want to go do that? No, it needs to come from me first. And that, I think, has been, you know, I've had a few moments like that since the fall of realizing this is the new hard for me. It's learning how to be softer. It's learning how to let people in. It's learning how to trust myself, speak on what I want, and to borrow a Mel Robbins phrase, let them.
Totally, let them, right?
You know, and then I get to decide how I react, you know. And I think I actually was talking to an old high school friend this morning about all of this. And, you know, we share a lot of the same past, you know, stuff with our parents, stuff with our siblings, you know, it's, and how that shows up in our lives, whether it's our professional lives, our romantic partnerships, our friendships, you know, even on our sports teams. So I just, the goal for me, I mean, a professional goal for me is to get a job, because that's, like, financially I'm looking, and I have a couple interviews lined up, which I'm excited about. But I come back often, and I talked about this with a group from the professional athlete community that I'm a part of now. It has to be, the process is so important. We talk about, like, it's, you know, The Brutalist movie, great movie, by the way, Adam Brody, that movie, spoiler alert, by the way, the end of it, they're like, don't let anyone fool you. It's the destination, not the journey. I had always thought it's the journey, not the destination. But if you combine those two things together, I think that there's a hybrid in there of it. They're meaning the same thing. They're just saying it in a different way. In order for you to reach your goals, you have to focus on the journey. You have to focus on the process, the day-to-day, how you're showing up for yourself. And for me, like, what I've been doing, when I stopped trying to find a job, when I did all of the advocacy for myself to get on Medicaid, to find my medical team, you know, and to start saying no to things and saying yes to other things, that is the new way that I'm showing myself love and grace, in addition to finding positive distractions or putting things on my calendar that are fun, that are not work related, that are not cleaning related, that are not healing related. Like, our purpose on this earth is not to heal. That is not our purpose.
Yeah, you're reminding me a little bit of Jana Lomax, who's a therapist and provider that we've had on a few times, and I just love her approach. But hers is like, you have to figure out what fills your cup. If your cup is full, great. It doesn't matter what combination you get there. And I think that there is this approach of, like, I'm like you. I think about the journey versus the destination all the time. And depending on the hour, it can change, right? Like, oh no, I'm all about the destination, or and I think there's also a line of thinking that's like, well, if we go on vacation, our ultimate destination is returning home. And we just cancel vacation because we know we're going to end up on the couch again. And to me, that was like, oh yeah. But I think it's like focusing on you hit it. Like, it's getting in your reps. It's focus on the action mindfully, not necessarily the outcome, though you may have the outcome in mind, and where you need to get. And it's, Because every destination we're shooting for is just a waypoint to, not to be somber, but it's a waypoint to our final chapter, right?
Yeah. Yeah. None of us, okay, spoiler alert again, none of us are getting out of here alive.
Right?
Like, and that's the thing. I think when we remember that we are part of, I think sometimes humans, we're so smart that we forget that we are an animal.
Right.
We forget that we are part of an ecosystem. We forget that we are part of something that is so complex that we think that we are above death. We are above aging. We are above, we have all of these systems, which are cool and great. And it's so interesting that we have all of these little niche things to, you know, try to make our skin less wrinkly, whatever. But at the end of the day, because I'm not here to yuck somebody's yum, but at the end of the day, we all are going to pass. Everyone that we love will pass. And I think about that often, and not in a somber way, more of as a reminder of, to humble me, that I am here as a miracle. Like, our existence is really special. The fact that we are here, and we have all of this, like, we live in this very interesting world that we don't understand fully. So, you know, it's, I was talking to another friend about this, and she said, it's a friend, a former rower and an excellent yoga teacher, Marina Traub, and she's helped the national team women so much. But I just had a phone call with her, and she was talking. She believes in, I don't know how much, but in reincarnation. And so we were talking about, you know, when you talk to somebody who you can kind of, might be kind of strange to think about, but you can talk to you, when you're talking to someone, it's like, I can tell you've never been a human being before. You were like something else in a previous life. Cause it feels like you're doing this for the first time. Which was an interesting way to think about it. And not as like a better than, but just the awareness sometimes that people have. And again, I'm saying this, and I'm recognizing that I might sound like a little bit crazy when I'm talking about this, but when you know that there is something different about you, and this was her point, when you know that you have something unique and special about you, it is your responsibility to yourself to own that and to share that gift with the world. And like, for me, I always grew up knowing that I was different. I just knew that I was different in some way. And I think that's like, I think that goes back to the goal. The goal is to live in that difference and to accept that part of me and figure out how to put that into words so that I can explain that to other people.
Yeah. And listen, let me tell you this. It's not easy. It is so hard. I mean, I'm going to share a little bit of my like professional side of my day job, which is I had a perfectly good career that I torched in part because of having been through 8 years of diagnosis, non-diagnosis, et cetera, spondylitis, not spondylitis, whatever they, you know, I don't need to take you down that road. But I shifted into a place of, and most of my life I was told, like, all I did was talk too much. I was a bull in a china shop. I was always disrupting because I talked too much. I was often like not thinking in alignment with whatever the group think was, which is not well received in a lot of situations. And Listen, I think we all at some point in our lives feel like we know we're different.
Yeah.
And the moment, like, I've seen in the last, I'm on year four now of being a, like, a startup founder, a tech founder, and which I will deny every day because I still just want to be like a leader of people. But it's crazy because 4 years, you just go through the paces and people consistently, I get into a room and occasionally things resonate with the whole room. Often they do not. But you know what the most beautiful thing of all of it is? And there are days, like today is actually one of them, where I am getting the crap beat out of me in terms of how we are positioning our organization. And just like we have to, we're shifting our whole product at the moment. Just kind of like, this is where I feel like I connect with you. You're like shifting you're shape shifting yourself, which is kind of what I'm doing too.
Yeah.
And the exhaustion that can come from that is so hard. But at the end of the day, we're trying. Right? Like we've decided we're going to break out from what that groupthink is, because whatever is inside of us, we know is this special thing that we have to celebrate. And not that everybody needs to go out and do that. This isn't for everyone. Like what you're trying to do in rewriting the book or writing the next book and what I'm trying to do are so, it is so hard. If I thought spondylitis was hard, oh my gosh. Like what I've decided to embark on, like on my daily living is really hard. And I think you hit it like the Mel Robbins thing. I've had to decide, and you know what? I don't care if people think I'm crazy at this point. I remember the first person I
know
pitched,
people think I'm crazy. So it doesn't matter.
People think I'm nuts too. And the first time I pitched my business idea was to someone I used to work for. And I sat down and I told him what I was going to do. And I said, I'm going to use the size, scale, and influence of large public companies to start measuring how we view people differently. And it's going to create a ripple effect of, you know, economic mobility and thriving communities. And he looked at me and he said, Jill, if you think you can change the world like that, you have departed from reality. And I looked at him and I said,
wow.
I think we're done talking. Wow. Like, nothing left. But what, you have, I mean,
what a disappointing thing to hear. I mean, yikes.
But right, I mean, but it's no more disappointing than you getting up and rowing and not getting across the finish line lengths ahead of everybody else every day, right? So
well,
what do you
I
do?
Guess,
you go back and you get in your reps.
Yeah. I guess what I meant was like, yeah, it hurts to hear it to be rejected, but also like if you know that what you're saying is if you right, so like that's if you know that's all that matters. And I think like that's how I felt when I was in my 4 years between Oklahoma and when I got hurt in Oklahoma, worked at Georgetown coaching, and then I did that for 2 and 4 years. I was in DC for 4 years and then I started training again. I had people telling me like, cause I was really vulnerable in that moment. It was like a little broken bird with a, you know, little gimpy wing. You know, I felt, and this is after back surgery, I would ask coaches, you know, that I knew and respected. It's like, hey, like I'm trying to get back into training. Like, do you have any advice? And were dismissive, right? They were like, well, you'll figure it out. You know, and I did figure it out. But that sort of level of gatekeeping that I, you know, somebody is asking you, and we talked a lot about this in the pro athlete community, like meetings of like, we're not here to gatekeep. Like I want to, for me to be a human being is the same as like how I wanted to be on a team. Did I make mistakes and do I make mistakes? Yes, all the time. When I say mistakes, I mean withholding information either unknowingly or like didn't understand the implication of what we said. So maybe that person didn't actually mean to for it to come across that way. They were trying to be encouraging, and I took it in that way. But why I'm saying that is, like, we, now that we know, like, how that feels, not only do we have the responsibility to honor what we know is true and to find the people that are going to support us in the way that we need, we also need to be champions for other people. And so, like, looking out for the people that, and that's part of what this is, honestly, is, like, sharing. I've had people like, oh, you're so brave and vulnerable. And I'm like, I am brave and vulnerable because I have to be.
Yeah.
And because right. I want, and because I want to be, because I care about you. I care about this planet. I care about animals. Like, I care about other people, and I don't enjoy seeing other people suffer. And if there's anything that I can do to help someone suffer less by taking this, like, going first, you know, there's a lot to be said about going first. Like, sometimes people just need somebody to speak up first. Yeah. And, like, I've needed somebody to go first a lot. Like, show me an example. I don't know what I'm doing. And now that I recognize that, like, I try to put myself in a position where, you know, I want to make space for other people to answer, obviously. So I'm not, like, pushing to the front of the line. But, like, if everyone's quiet and no one's speaking up, I'm like, okay, like, this is, I need to say something. And, you know, to use, I don't want to get too off track, but to use another reference point, because, you know, part of my story is also includes a sexual assault, which I think is tied again to, like, trauma. We've talked about this. I feel like is, and stress and anger and all that is tied to how inflammation shows up in our bodies. But, you know, totally. Oh gosh, where was I going with that? I was bringing this up. Oh, it doesn't matter. You know what? Scratch it. I forgot.
You're right. Like, there's all this, and you said it, like, I did a talk on limiting beliefs at a conference a few months after I, like, completely blew up my career 4 years ago. And one of the questions was something about, like, well, now that you've overcome all your limiting beliefs, I'm like, well, oh, overcoming a limiting belief about yourself or something about yourself is, it's a moment in time, and you have to continue to show up and do it. And I remember sitting up there, and, you know, and I had, like, hair and makeup done and all this stuff. But I looked at the person and I said, you do realize, though, like, we all look great sitting up here on the stage, but none of you were there the nights we cried ourselves to sleep to overcome those.
Yeah.
And that thing too is, like, that is part of the journey and the steps. And it's also, to your point, like, about when, you know, people look at you and do they expect you to have the answers? Maybe, but it's also about what, like, what you believe with what you have and your own personal experiences. And I remember back in, it was like 2018. It was one of the very first podcasts I ever listened to. Someone sent it to me, and it was Jay Shetty and Joe Dispenza. And I remember Jay Shetty says in it, it changed my life. He says, do not live as a perception of a perception of yourself. And I think, like, I think the knowledge you talk about is really important, but it also, like, it's wisdom too, right? Like, what you have been through gives you this unique viewpoint to talk through the journey from information to knowledge. And I always say over the beautiful bridge to wisdom, because that's
rainbow,
like,
bridge.
You're talking, and it is, it's like the rainbow bridge, and I'm sure there's trolls or billy goats or whatever underneath it.
Many trolls.
But it's hard. But it also shapes, like, that next book, I think. Okay, I know we're totally, like, in the weeds here today, but
that's okay.
So let's go back. I'm going to rephrase my question from 15 minutes ago. What's the next big thing for you? If you were feeling great and everything was super clear. What is the title of the book too?
So I have hated that question since I was born, because I'm going to answer your question with another quote. It's an Oscar Wilde quote, and it's a paraphrase. The people who want to be doctors and lawyers, and they already know what they want to do. That's their curse.
Yeah.
The gift of the artist is that they basically are always becoming something else. And so I actually remember a conversation that I had in kindergarten, coloring on the floor with a classmate of mine. She asked me, "What is that you're drawing?" And I said, "I don't really know, but I'll figure it out." And that's how I feel. I am figuring it out. I'm talking a life into existence. I am putting myself in rooms with people and things that excite me and that don't feel like work, that don't feel like I have to be there.
Flow.
I think I told you that I had a dinner with my high school coaches from rowing two nights ago, and it was fantastic to see them. And it felt like a part of me came back full circle. It was really nice. But what I told them was, you know, I had an opportunity to do some part-time coaching, but I started to feel anxiety around that. And when I looked a little deeper of why am I feeling anxious? I know I'm a good coach. I know I like coaching. However, I am burned out from rowing. I am excited. I want to think about other stuff right now. It doesn't mean I don't like rowing. It doesn't mean I never want to do it or look at it again. Because we are capable of thinking about and holding multiple feelings at once. What I do want to do is explore the things that I didn't do. Some people call it a sacrifice that I didn't do while I was training because I was training.
Right.
Some of that is going to just be a hobby, and some of it is going to be me figuring out a job title that fits with my current set of skills and what I want to do with those skills and how I want to evolve over time. I took a deep dive into my core values when I was at a PAC event in Nashville, and I had a great table coach, and he helped me sort of peel out the core values being honor, generosity, and exploration. And those have been really grounding for me of I want to honor the past, present, and future me and the people and places and things that are around me. So I really do care about like the essence of things. And through that, I showed love and generosity. However, to go back to the previous point, I have not been honoring myself to the degree that I need to. So generosity to others, and if we talk about balance, that balance needs to shift back in my direction a little bit more.
Yeah.
And you could call that boundaries, you can call that whatever you want to call it, but I need to honor myself. And that looks a lot like doing and being the thing that I feel like is the right thing to be doing and thinking, if that makes sense. So like the be the change that you want to see.
Like, listen, it is. And I think we all seek that. Right. And it's like, how do you, the Japanese call it ikigai, right? It's like, how do you take what you know, how you know it, what you love to do, what makes you feel good, and can you make money doing it? And right. I think those are all like, that's what you're talking about. Believe me, I'm a seeker of it too. And it's a funny place because it's the letting go of what everyone else thinks. And you made a comment about it, like the let them, which is so true. Right. And I think of it as like, there's 8 billion people on this earth. And if 3 of them don't like me, I'm just going to keep moving. And if another one doesn't like me, I'll keep moving. As long right. as my, I always predicate everything on, you have to do it in the direction of truth and love. Like whatever you do has to be that. So, you know, I'm not yeah. advocating for criminal or unkind activities, but I do think you're right. And it all starts with values. I remember after going through being ill, I mean, it was prior to diagnosis, spondylitis pretty much destroyed me for a few years and maybe decades. And then once I got diagnosed, it was several years. But I remember not long after, like, really feeling good. So it took me about 4 years to really feel good after diagnosis.
Yeah.
And I remember sitting at the time with my therapist and I looked at him and I said, Steve, I'm not even sure I know what my values are. And we did. We went through a values exercise. And what came out, I was like, oh, okay. These totally make sense. And mine, you shared yours, so I'll share mine. Mine are health, faith, family, kindness, and curiosity.
I love that.
Yeah. And I mean, when I feel crappy, I'm like, oh, well, I'm not honoring my values if I'm not doing what I need to. And listen, I say this all, I want to be minus in life when it's all said and done, but, you're right on the values piece and to like continue to explore that. And frankly, I don't think we do it enough, and we're constrained. Of course, we're all constrained by paychecks and kids and illness and things we want to get done in life. But it's so hard to live when you for me and probably you too, you've been faced with this disease of, I know it doesn't feel like it for most people, but some days I look back and I don't want to call it a blessing, but I think of all the community and all the things I've learned because of it. Does the impact, the negative outweigh the positive yet? I'm not sure. I don't know that I have that scale figured out. But the taking the steps every day for what is most authentically you, like that does turn into beauty. And, you know, rowing might not be, you may never, I mean, I'm not saying you should or shouldn't, but like, who cares if you don't ever row again? Besides you.
No one cares. They just, you know what I'm learning? Like, we put all this pressure on ourselves. It's the pressure that we put on ourselves, right?
Yeah.
Like, and maybe it's some external, but like, it is all for me. And I had therapists that have asked me, like, were your parents really like, no, I did it. I did all that. I did it all. I figured it, you know, and it's, I put all the pressure on myself and I like pressure. You know, I like things that are a challenge. And I think that right. that's fun for me. I don't like sitting still, but I have to learn how to do both.
And yes.
And it's so, you know, like it's I have so to hard. Learn, I like hard. So now I need to learn how to like easy.
I could write the book in that for you.
Right.
Okay. We're going to land this plane.
Okay.
Last question.
Okay.
What do drum roll, easiest question ever for anybody who is as driven and tense as you. And I say that lovingly. What is something most people don't know about you that brings you joy?
I think some people are starting to know, but I love, so definitely my dog for sure. But I really, you know, I remember being in fifth grade and telling my mom I didn't want to sweat because I didn't want to go to basketball camp. Like I love animals and I love the garden and I love music and I love drawing and singing and that artistic side of me and writing. And those things have been have been the things that I'm starting to return to is like finding solace and softness and removing competition from it. And, you know, just finding the flow or just the stillness. You know, I love my dog. I mean, I taught him how to, I adopted a dog in Cleveland when I worked there. His name is Bubba. He's a Cane Corso mix, which is basically like an Italian Mastiff breed. And so he's like 85, 90 pounds. But he's so good. I mean, he's frustrating, but I also realize how beneficial he's been for my mental and physical health and like helping me through, you know, the doldrums really. I'm an extremely empathetic person, and I also feel a strong connection with animals and my environment. And I really feel emotion very strongly and through nonverbal communication in a lot of ways. So because I pay attention to all that stuff, I feel like I really can sense how people are feeling and animals are feeling. And so that to me is, and I know that they feel that with us too. And so,
yeah,
because I think that I have that great relationship with animals in general, cause I watch other people's pets too, sometimes just for my neighbors. But, you know, I think that that connection and respect that I have for other creatures has made me more curious about things that are different. So what I mean by that is like, I love things that are, I love myself, right? And I'm learning how to love myself and figure out who myself is. But I also have been very curious my entire life about different cultures. So I love cooking and eating food, like different music, different, you know, I put myself in an international dorm in college on purpose. Like I signed up to live in the international dorm because I wanted to be in spaces where I was not, I didn't look and think like everybody else. So I really, yeah, truly, like, I really believe in empathy, in living it. And so like going out and seeking out things that are different, that challenge my, you know, experience. And that's allowed me to, you know, I feel, yes, I honor my experience and like all of the tough stuff that I've had to deal with, but it also has helped me, I feel like, have a bigger heart for the world, honestly, and be, and think like, okay, yes, what I'm dealing with is really hard, and everybody else out there is going through their own struggle. And so that's why it's so important to be kind to one another, to look out for one another, to, you know, try to think about the things that we do and say and things that we vote for, like how that affects not just me and my circle of living, but how that affects everybody else. And that is like, I don't think many people know that I care that much about,
yeah,
them, honestly. I think about it all the time. I think about it all the time.
Yeah. That's amazing. All right. So on that note, we're going to wrap, but I would love to like have you back when, like, I would love to keep going on your chapters.
And cool. Let's do it.
I think that would be amazing. Cause I think you have like your ability to endure and be grateful is amazing, but people always say things like that and they don't always appreciate that. Like, there is also like a side of that that is very difficult as a human being with a chronic illness. So I would love to keep on your journey as you continue to figure out like where your voice and mind fit most in the world. I'm so grateful to have spent all this time with you.
Thank you. Me too. And the last thing I'll say, which I think is a nice segue, is that the thing that I am also trying to work on is I, when I had this last hit on the resume, I felt like I had already earned my resilience badge and I didn't have to go through it again. So I was a little bit indignant that I was going through another transition yet again. And I was like ready to throw in the towel. And I'm like, what is your alternative? So for me going forward, it's like, you are always going to have a season of transition. And so like, none of us are above this. So I think that's where I'm landing right now is like being accepting that we're always going to have seasons.
Oh, that is. Know?
So that's kind of like.
Profound.
Because this doesn't end. Like in 20 years, we're going to go through another transition. Eventually, I'm going to have to lay my parents to rest. Eventually, I'm going to have to lay my dog to rest. You know,
yeah.
Like the things that I love.
No, it is.
You know, it's like, it's going to happen. Yeah. And so, man, it doesn't ever get easier, but we just learn how to move through it differently, I guess. So that's, I guess,
and what we build the resilience.
Learning. Yeah.
Yeah. That's beautiful. So,
you are great. Thanks, Jill.
Thank you.
SpondyCast was made possible by donations from the Spondylitis Association of America's individual members and our show's corporate sponsor, AbbVie.
Since our founding in 1983, the Spondylitis Association of America has been the face, voice, and leading nationwide nonprofit, educating, empowering, and advocating for people living with spondyloarthritis. Through our extensive work with patients, the medical community, and partners, we provide information and resources to help people impacted by the disease live better lives and champion research to find a cure.